So we're not open, right? All right, we're about to go live, so anything you say now
we're live.
Recorded.
We're live.
All right, so we are live, we're being recorded. Welcome to the November 21st meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. Those of you that are just calling in, thank you for your patience. No, we're not starting late because we got here late. We're starting late because we've worked significant, had work to do, just educational work that we did prior to this meeting started. So thank you for your patience. I'm going to start just a few minutes late. I'm about to ask roll to be taken, but for those of you that are calling in or pay attention, you may notice that roll is going to change because every year we have obviously folks that join us and folks that are taking advantage of other opportunities. I want to thank those people that are no longer active members of this community, of this committee, but following Judge Blum, Judge Nadler, and Judge McCabe, and CEOs Mr. Roddy, Mr. Harrigan, and Ms. Ugun Campobianco, finally known as Tanya to all of us. If by chance you've decided you want to listen in and you're listening in on the phone, I hope you hear our thanks to every one of you for the work and the joy you provided to us in your participation in this committee. And I use that term intentionally. Much of the work this committee does is tough, but it's always great to have everybody in the room. So thank you very much for the work you did for us. Joining us now, and some coming back to this committee, some having contact to this committee, Judges Heinrichs, Judge Kelly, and Judge Ryan are in the room. CEOs Nancy Eberhardt is calling in. Sean Landry, Chris Rule, and Neil Taniguchi are now members of this advisory committee. I think everybody that I just listed off is in the room except for Nancy. So thank you all very much for joining us. And with those new members being introduced and those prior members being thanked, I'm now going to ask Brandy to take roll.
Judge Conklin?
I'm here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Buckley?
Here.
Judge Koh?
Here.
Judge Fannin?
Here.
Judge Gabe?
Standing up, but she's here because she came in the car with me from Fresno, so she's here.
Judge Heinrichs?
Here.
Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Margin?
Here.
Judge Ryan?
Here.
Judge Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Ms. Eberhardt?
She's phoning in. Nancy?
I'm here.
Great. Mr. Binky?
Here.
Mr. Landry?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roll?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Ms. Turner?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
Advisory member is Mr. Wardlaw?
Here.
Mr. Theodorovich?
And you will also note that there was one other name on the roster who was not called, and that is Judge, soon-to-be Justice Jackson. And we congratulate her. We didn't expect her this morning, but she reached out to me this morning before the meeting, sent me an email, said, I'm sorry I can't be in the room. Something last minute came up. It might be a conversation with the governor. I don't know. But we congratulate Terry for that appointment. More than well-deserved. And thank you if you're listening in. And if not, we'll try to get these thoughts to you. But thank you very much for your contributions to this advisory committee. And don't forget about us. Judge Gates came in. I even though we don't do proxies, I acknowledged you were present. So Brandy's just got a few just technical rules that we remind everybody of before we get started.
Reminder, the meeting is open to the public and is being recorded. Members on the phone, please identify yourselves prior to speaking for the benefit of all participating. Place your phones on mute when not speaking, and please do not place us on hold.
And so I tell the story every time, but I'll remind you all that the speakers in this room sometimes that pick up your voice are not particularly effective, but sometimes they are. And a few meetings ago, I turned to Rebecca and I said, I've got a headache. And the next day, I got a couple of emails asking me if my headache was any better. So just as a note of common sense, please just remember all your comments are appropriate, but are being picked up. So before we move to the more formal work of this advisory committee, I'm going to invite an approval of the minutes from the August 7th TICBAC meeting, as well as the September 11th and October 9th actions by email between meetings. They're on page 5 of your materials. Is there a motion to approve those items?
Judge Thompson moves to approve.
Judge Thompson to approve. And Planet Seconds has been moved and seconded that the minutes, as noted, be approved. Is there any opposition to that motion to approve the minutes? Hearing no opposition, I deem the minutes from each of those events unanimously approved.
I think I need to abstain. I was not present at one of those meetings.
Thanks very much. So Judge Marginis has abstained because he wasn't present. Judge Heinrichs has abstained because she wasn't here then, as well as Judge Ryan is abstaining because, and Mr. Rule is abstaining because they were not, and Judge Fannin, that they were not here then, even though they're here now, and Mr. Taniguchi.
Thank you, Judge.
Same for Judge.
And this is Nancy on the phone. This is Nancy. I'm abstaining for the items I was not present for either.
Okay, but we've got a quorum, so we're good to go. I do not believe we have any public comment.
No.
Great. No public comment, no written comment to consider. So I think that gets us right to our discussion items. And the first discussion item is methodology for reallocation of the workload formula. It's a page 11 of your materials. And we were talking yesterday as we were getting ready this meeting, and we're going to nickname this meeting the Michelle Allen Show. I think we're going to hear from Michelle quite a bit today. And the first one is this item, it's consideration of funding methodology. This is from FMS, a recommendation on the methodology for reallocation of workload formula needs. I've said enough. Michelle?
Thank you. Good morning. Since October 8, 2019 meeting, the funding methodology subcommittee took up the issue of developing a methodology for reallocation of workload formula funds in years when new funding, defined as ongoing, general discretionary dollars that support trial court workload, including benefits and retirement cost change funding, and years when no new money is provided. The Judicial Council has taken action by adopting parameters for both scenarios. In years of new funding, the Council adopted a process to allocate funds based on a sequence, which is shown on page 11 of the material. The FMS focused on the allocation of up to 50% of remaining funds to courts under the statewide average funding ratio after bringing Cluster 1 courts up to 100% of fund need. The current workload formula does not specify a method for allocating the 50% of funding to courts below the statewide average. And when the 2019 Budget Act provided funding for support of 25 new judgeships totaling $24 million, the funding was not sufficient to bring all courts below the statewide average up to the statewide average. The Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee recommended to allocate the 50% of funding based on a weighted approach that considers both a court's distance from the statewide average and the size of the court. This approach was used to allocate the new judgeship funding provided in the 2019 Budget Act. Judicial Council Budget Services staff subsequently recommended an alternative approach that bases the allocation of funds on a court's relative size of workload formula need instead of its relation to the workload formula allocation. Attachment 1A of the material shows the allocation of the 2019 new judgeship funding as it was allocated based on the workload formula allocation, and alternatively shows how the funding would have occurred based on need instead of allocation. The alternative approach results in the court farthest from the statewide average receiving additional funding. Budget Services staff supported the alternate approach as it is thought that allocating dollars based on allocation risks perpetuating funding disparity, which is in conflict with the intent of the workload formula to promote funding equity among all 58 trial courts. Allocating dollars based on needs better supports the path of funding equity. The Judicial Council approved parameters in years for which no new money is provided at its January 12, 2018 business meeting and are found on page 13 of your material. Parameters include establishing bands above and below the statewide average funding level, protection against allocation adjustments to those courts within the band, as well as Cluster 1 courts, establishment of reallocating every other fiscal year where new funding is provided regardless of years of increase or decrease between, and capping the reallocation of funding from courts above the band to below the band at 1%. Subsequently, the FMS proposed reallocating funding from courts above 105% of funding needs on June 17, 2019. To address the addition of the 105% policy, staff recommended a process outlined in steps 1 through 7 on page 14 of the meeting material. Attachment 1B shows two approaches to applying the process. One follows the steps as outlined in the report, and the other reverses the application of the 2% reduction for courts over 105%, then applying the up to 100% reduction for courts more than 2% over the band. Using the second scenario results in larger reductions, and Budget Services staff expressed support for the first option, as shown in the report, as it is thought the recent policy decision for courts over 105% was established in a way to control against courts taking a large cut in a single year and was designed to prevent courts from going below 104% of funding needs. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee recommends the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approved the recommendations beginning on page 14 of the materials that establish a methodology for allocating the first 50% of new funding to courts below the statewide average, scaled by a court's distance from the statewide average and size based on workload formula need, while providing an exception to that, to the first recommendation for allocating the 2020-21 support for new judgeships provided in the 2019 Budget Act to allow for allocating those funds on the same methodology used when allocating the 2019-20 funds appropriated in the Budget Act, and specify reallocation methodology for every second year in which no new money is provided be based on workload formula need and an established sequence based on an establishment of bands, application of up to 1% reduction, reduction to courts then above 105% of funding needs, and control against any court falling below 104% of funding.
So, the recommendations that Michelle just talked to us about are on page 14 and 15. This comes from FMS. So, Sherry, did you have, and I'm going to ask either Judge Buckley or Rebecca to comment as well. But Sherry, no, go ahead. You had your hand. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I just think that we always be consistent and make decisions based on need. So I was ready to make a motion to approve that it's got to be based on need. I mean, that's consistent with what we do. But I would not want to take away the moment from our co-chair.
I was just going to ask if they had anything they wanted to add. I know a lot of work was done by that subcommittee. They get this to us.
I would not add anything. I would give the moment back to Sherry.
Brilliantly said.
The only thing that I wanted to add is there was an extensive discussion in the subcommittees to try to come up with an appropriate way to go forward. And one of the focuses that we made was looking at some of the principles that were early development of the funding methodology, and for all intents and purposes, they were preserved. And I think there was great consideration, as what was expressed, that he'd be a significant factor going forward. But again, also principled by some of the things that we established early on.
Any other comments or questions about any of these? I always try not to say too much because I mess things up, but I'm going to echo those comments that were made. There's a lot from the outside looking in. Sometimes these issues, it's like, well, why can't you guys just figure this out? Every time we make a move, it's just sort of, for lack of a better description, the butterfly effect. I mean, you start to affect, move $1, and it affects dollars throughout the branch for trial courts, and we have to be very cognizant of that. And the work, and I think, again, the work of FMS and bringing this to us, but they've done that. They've drilled very far down into this. They've done their best to look at all the different implications this has. And at the end of the day, as I think even David or Sherry stated, this is one that recognizes need, but also recognizes that those courts, every court, wherever they are on the need scale, plus or minus, for lack of a better description, are impacted by these decisions. And we have to be aware of that as we work through these. Enough said. Any other comments or a motion?
Well, I'll just finish where I started, that I do think for the first recommendation that we should, make a motion that we support the recommendation and always allocate the first 50% based on page 14, item A, which is on need.
So are you making a motion to be approved as stated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Just want to make sure you weren't asking that anyway.
You're breaking it up into three motions?
Well, because I didn't know if people would want to talk about B separately, you know, because B is somewhat inconsistent with A, because they're saying don't use need for the second half of the year, and I didn't know if anybody wanted to talk about that or not. I'm actually okay with B as well, but I'm okay with changing it. So that I thought there might be discussion around each one, which is the only reason I did that, Judge Cope. But
I was going to second it, but I think I'll work.
So you are or not?
If I only do A, which is second A?
I will.
Okay. Judge Cope.
So right now it looks like we've got a motion on A moved and seconded, and considering that, and therefore we're going to take it in that way. It's just sort of by default, that's what we've done. Unless, Judge Cope, were you saying that if Ms. Carter was adding in B, you'd second that as well?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I would be happy to. I will add B, too.
And what about C?
I actually agreed with all of the recommendations.
I thought you might.
But because it's new members, I didn't know if there was the need to discuss any of them. So let me do this. I'll throw out the motion for all of the recommendations, and then if there's discussion around them, you can ask for that.
Excellent. And, Judge Cope, are you seconding that motion, A, B, and C?
That was...
Great. So for new members, that's generally the way we operate. We have some discussion ahead of time, and then there's a motion. The motion's seconded, so now we are continuing to discuss all the recommendations set forth on page 14 and 15, A, B, and C, and all of 1 through 4, the subdivisions of C. So that we're now all open for discussion. There is it. Anybody on the phone? Any membership? Do you have a comment?
Broadly not.
Okay, broadly, you may.
Just as for the new members, this is an effort to, like, sort of memorialize in great detail the complexity of the workload formula so that there isn't ambiguity going forward. I think that's important when this whole issue of need and allocation as part of it. So, you know, some of these might seem very tedious, but I think they're critical. I think the folks have, like, had a good idea, like, we need to put these step by step down so that, you know, a year from now, 5 years from now, when someone looks at it again, there won't be this uncertainty. It'll be, this was when it was done, this is the method, and everybody knows what it is. So there isn't that kind of
thing. Turner?
I think that's important.
So just for new members, but also for some of us old members that don't have great retention any longer.
What's the existing members?
There you go. Even better. I think it would be worthwhile to at least talk about the, in item C,
Roman numeral 3, this decision we made that courts above 105% of funding need will not fall below 104% of funding need. Because I think for the courts that are in the, you know, 75-80% of funding need category, you know, I think it's worth having a discussion about what was our thinking when we made that decision way back. And I recall that we did have a lot of discussion about it a year or so ago.
Okay, that's a fair comment. Anybody want to sort of add a little bit of detail to those that are described as overfunded above 105%? They would be cut 2%, but in no case down to lower than 104%. And again, I think I'm echoing what Blocko said and others have said, but not only do we try to talk about how funds are allocated, but we also try to provide as much information as we can to allow courts to plan for different outcomes in the future. But Kim makes a good point. Does anybody want to sort of, David?
I could just clarify.
Sure.
So one of the things that people want to look at, some of the history of what we try to do is we very much took note of the impact that reductions to courts were having. And of course, there were more under-resourced courts than perhaps severely under-resourced courts. And so there have been year after year pretty significant reductions. And so one of the mechanisms that was built in is that those that would be facing a redistribution would be looking at a specific amount, and that was 1%. So in the years where the workload funding methodology sought to redistribute money from court A to court B through, you know, G, let's say, there would be kind of a limit because courts have a difficult time adjusting from year to year to those reductions. So in preservation of the notion that the reductions would be at 1%, basically, we try to preserve that looking at those courts that were over 104%. So taking that into consideration, we always set you're capped in terms of what the amount of the reduction was going to be. So moving forward, now that more money is coming to the branch, one of the issues that we've discussed in great detail was that even if you're at 100% and you don't get new money, because of cost increases, you're essentially going to be operating at, let's say, 97%. So we're very much mindful of costs that we don't necessarily get recognized for and not necessarily getting funded. So the number of, even though you're at 100%, we thought it was very important to recognize, even if we got a baseline increase, that increase potentially would cover some of those increases that a court would see. But those factors, you know, overlaid with, you know, we can't be at 120% funding. And so try to build in some process and mechanism that gives all courts an opportunity to start planning as they start, you know, ticking up to that, perhaps that number, that higher number, that they should be prepared to do what's necessary to absorb whatever reductions that were going to be perhaps considered by the Budget Advisory Committee and the Judicial Council. So mindful of the severity of the reductions, but also the challenge that many courts have in just sustaining base operations when there's no increase in funding.
And to address specifically that item 3, that was simply a function of math.
Right.
If you were funded at 105.1% and you could lose up to 2%, you would drop down to 103.1. But if you were funded at 104.9, you could only drop 1%, so you'd have to be at 103.9. So that didn't make sense. So that was just there were two courts, if I recall, that were affected by it. It was just a blip that was addressed by that. It's really just not very significant.
Judge Gabe?
Well, I guess I'm not following something here. Why 104 as opposed to 103?
Because 104 is 1% less than 105. It was just to protect those that were barely over 105.
Kim Turner.
And I'm wondering if our dreams come true and we get our trial court funding stabilization BCP passed, which includes a CPI factor in, so it's
and the CPI adjustment that would be made. I'm assuming at that point we would be able to look again at this 104% issue, because we would in theory be funded for our increases that are, you know, that are CPI related.
So actually, Kim, I think the beauty of this is it recognizes what David stated, which is regardless of where you are on the spread, you have cost increases. But with the stabilization money, we should all rise, and so the average funding line would rise, and those courts that may be above 104% will fall because we're all going to rise together, and the way the money is allocated, it goes to those under the average funding line first, which pushes everybody up. So you're right, it will change the math, and so we really all just want new money. New money is going to help all of it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And what I would throw out is that with more money, or maybe in the future, we may adjust II too. We might the 105% be 104, 103. But like Judge Cope said, wherever we go with two, we're going to have an adjustment with three, so that the person or the court right above that number is treated
not
as fairly as the one that's right below that, whatever that number is.
Yeah.
Wherever you are and whatever you get, you're impacted by these. I mean, even if you're above, it's hard to make a cut. Any other comments? So right now there's a motion move to approve A, B, C, and all parts of those, and we're still in an open discussion on this. I just wanted to, once again, focus us where we are for further questions. Did I see another hand? Is there a motion if there's no further discussion? It's been moved and approved. I'm sorry. Yep, moved and approved that the recommendations are set forth on page 14 and 15 of your materials be approved. There's been full discussion. If there's no request for further discussion, is there any opposition to that motion? Hearing no opposition, I'll deem the motion unanimously approved. The recommendation on pages 14 and 15 is approved. Thank you all very much for that. And we now move to item two. And, we're going to go away from the Michelle show, and I think we're going to go to Randy on this. This is distribution of the fee for court reporter services in civil proceedings lasting more than 1 year.
One hour, sorry.
And this is, again, from FMS, a recommendation on distribution of the court reporter fee assessed pursuant to Government Code 6808682
and Brin. So there are two fees regarding court reporter services and civil proceedings. As Judge Cope just mentioned, Government Code 6808681, fees for services lasting less than 1 hour. And these are first deposited into the Trial Court Trust Fund, or the TCTF, and then distributed back to courts on a dollar-for-dollar basis. The second fee, Government Code, those numbers A2, are fees for services that last 1 hour or more. And this Government Code is silent on where these fees are deposited, and the practice has been that they are deposited to the Trial Court Trust Fund, and then they are on a statewide level, and they are not transmitted back to courts. So, and I'm going to do this a few times for my sake as well. Less than an hour goes back to the courts. 1 hour or more goes to the TCTF for statewide distribution. So the first recommendation of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee is that since trial courts are able to retain the fees for less than an hour services and they use those to offset costs, approval of the same approach for the over an hour services will provide consistency in allowing courts to offset costs here as well. And the recommendation is that fee be treated equally as the other on a dollar-for-dollar basis back to courts beginning at July 1, 2020. So there are two or three implications that I have to mention that relate to this recommendation. So first off, the Trial Court Trust Fund revenue stream would be impacted annually by approximately $3 million should this be approved, because the $3 million is going from the Trial Court Trust Fund to trial courts directly. The second implication is that the Trial Court Trust Fund would experience an estimated loss of about $1.4 million in backfill revenue every year. This is revenue that is currently provided by the general fund, and so going forward, any other revenue losses would impact the trial courts directly. So I'm going to look to Zlatko to help better understand, to explain that for me.
Yeah, so when we established our, we had a proper trust fund revenue decline to the point where there was, we needed to ask, we asked the state to backfill lost revenues to ensure that your base allocations were fully funded. At the time that that math was done, this revenue was part of that, and so there had been some decline, and so there had been a backfill to cover that cost so that your allocations were fully funded. So if we now pull that revenue out, there isn't that part of the backfill, so that's a loss of the backfill, and the actual revenue is going to decrease. The implication from my perspective is that you're draining the TCTF fund balance because there's now an allocation being remained held at the same level because this recommendation does not reflect a like allocation reduction due to the loss of revenue. It's saying keep your allocations at the same level. Well, absent the revenue, since you're retaining it locally, a revenue to fund the allocation, we will have to look at the revenues in the TCTF. Ultimately, fund balance will be the place that has to come from. In the current moment, we have a reasonable fund balance viewed by some, small by others. There are draws like this issue with the openers that, you know, might also be draws on. Yes, we don't know in terms of when the backfill policy, so there's risk to the TCTF in having that revenue be pulled out of there and maintaining the allocations for our levels. But it's just my concern as the fund manager of the TCTF that we're going to draw down the revenues out of the TCTF and the reserves to maintain the allocation at the same level.
Thank you, Zlatko. So going on, the final item that I have to share is that if the 1 hour or more recommendation is approved, this local revenue stream would need to be reviewed and how it impacts the workload formula. So the second funding methodology subcommittee recommendation is to exclude the revenue from the workload formula in conjunction with the other fee, the less than an hour fee, as civil court reporter proceedings is an activity that is not captured in the resource assessment study or RAS, and is not included in the workload formula. And that is all I have. So I'm happy to help answer any questions you may have.
So,
Judge Marshall, go ahead.
Some courts will profit and some will lose money if the over 1 hour money comes back dollar for dollar to those courts.
No, so currently they're receiving nothing for that service to offset their costs. So any court, if this were to be approved, courts would either, they would see something if they were due something.
Right.
Yes.
Well, they wouldn't see any less.
Correct.
Well, the base allocation is remaining the same.
Yep.
So there's no loss on that end, which is what sort of my concern is, that there's not an offsetting reduction there. So they would retain that from another funding, from other revenues backfilled from the TROP or trust fund balance, and gain whatever it is that their revenues were at the local level. So this is no worse off if you do nothing, and a gain. So while there's that, again, there's that the benefit of it being on top of, from my perspective, the TCTF fund balance implication is something that you should consider going forward.
Well, if I'm understanding correctly, there's no net loss to the individual court. For the TCTF, potentially, could see a negative with respect to the backfill to the tune of $1.4 million, is the estimate. So on an individual court basis, no net loss. To the fund, potentially there's an impact from a backfill perspective.
I think there definitely would be a loss if the revenue that was funding all the courts in the base allocations would no longer be part of the revenue to support it. So there will be a loss. We said from the $3.3 million that's currently being deposited, that won't be deposited anymore. They'll be sustaining an allocation that doesn't have that revenue flow behind it. So there will be a net loss to the TCTF, combination of the backfill and the direct revenues that were going into the TCTF.
So hold on, we're going to Sherry and then Judge Gabe and then Rebecca. Sherry?
I'm trying to figure out how to simplify what this means. So, Judge Martin is partly correct. Those courts that provide five court reporters in civil are doing that with no allocation to fund those salaries because it's not mandated. And so by making this, by approving this recommendation, that is an expenditure on a balance sheet that does not give the revenue to those courts that have the expenditure, which is why the recommendation is on the agenda. The decision of putting it in the trial court trust fund was made, and I think we didn't think that through at the time, because at that time, those courts that were providing that service, it was not included in the work in RAS, which is how we measure work that the trial courts provide that then gets set up into WAFM, now known as the workload formula. So by allowing the funds that are collected by the courts that provide the service, gives those courts the revenue stream for a non-mandated expenditure. By not putting it in the trial court trust fund, it does reduce the amount that goes into the trial court trust fund, and right now we have a balance, but in the future if we don't have a balance, it could be that courts that currently benefited from other courts collecting that money may see a loss. And so the reason that I think this is the right decision is because when you're looking at revenues and expenditures, if you have an expenditure that is not part of RAS, and it is a non-mandated area, to provide the revenue to those courts that provide that service seems to be the right revenue stream, like we did in the over 1 hour. We made that decision for that reason. This is now consistent with what we did with the over an hour. We're now saying it should be the under an hour. So I don't know if I helped clarify it or made it muddier, but it is A, consistent with a prior decision that we've made, recognizing it's a non-mandated area and not every court does it. LA does not provide court reporters in civil. And so we did not benefit from this unless at some point we ever were able to hire any, which we will never be able to do because there aren't enough anyway. So I am trying to help explain the rationale. And I know it's complicated, but I'm trying to help.
Okay.
I think Sherry just answered my question.
Okay, perfect.
Just one person got it.
Yeah, that's the benefit of being pale and reading all the details.
So I'm hoping my comments don't make it more confusing either, but in the conversation at the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, it kind of got broken down at a couple different places too, that this is a cost recovery revenue, and those revenues are being applied to the cost where they occurred, and that so that kind of frames a little bit of the approach. The shortfall in the trial court trust fund, if there's a shortfall, we're leaning on these revenues to fill it, not necessarily caused by these expenses. So therefore, we have a secondary problem that perhaps we should address by addressing the shortfall and what's causing the shortfall in the beginning. And so that conversation, that path was evaluated a little bit in the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. We didn't come up with a solution for the secondary problem, but it became evident that, you know, we're using these revenues that are being generated by a service that's not necessarily part of this trial court trust fund over here, we're leaning on them. And so it very well may be, to Glocko's point, we need to address that in a secondary conversation.
I think that the preservation of the base allocation, absent the revenue that base allocation was being funded by, is my concern, because we draw, and I mean, at, you know, $3.5-4 million, and we have a $30 million now. Depending on how things go, we will be facing some implication on your allocation. And if we don't, I would say that if there's a minus, the takeaway of the revenue should somehow impact the allocation on the base side.
And I'm challenging that a little bit, because I'm going to use LA as an example. If it gets to the point where it impacts the trial court trust fund allocation, the question I would throw out is it fair for court to collect the money and put it in the pot to give a share to me? And I would say no, because I don't provide the service. I mean, that is putting it as straightforward as I can, and that's reason of the recommendation. But, and I don't just mean me, because there's other courts that don't provide.
But to Zlatko's point, I think there is a secondary conversation that has to be had about that shortfall and why that is.
And would that be at FMS?
That is your decision.
You know, I don't know if that's a conversation we haven't already had. We discussed that at FMS, and I think that if we can't count it as part of the backfill, that's a judicial council decision. I think that's kind of where we ended up, didn't we?
It's just the nature of the way in which the backfill
is reported.
Right.
So that is not a judicial council issue. That is the path behind the backfill that we do that identified all the revenues that support your base allocation.
And I don't think that's something we can decide.
It's not. Well, it's not part of the recommendation today. It's maybe it's for a later day, but not today. So, Kim?
Yeah, so notwithstanding the concern, which is very real, that Zlatko has expressed, I want to move approval of the recommendation for the following reason. I think the idea that the less than 1 hour and more than 1 hour, that there's a difference in the way we handle the revenue in those instances, doesn't make any sense. And it's just not good government to have, you know, to have nonsensical policies in place. I'm also a fan of having, you know, cost abatement go back to the originating court. So I think that the, you know, that the rationale behind why we would do this makes a lot of sense. And so I think that we do have a $3 million or however many million dollar hole that we need to address. How we address that may not come before this committee. I'm not really sure how that gets addressed. But I would say that that's tomorrow's problem. Today's problem is to try to get some consistency in the way these practices are done. So I move approval for those reasons.
All right. It's been moved that the recommendation set forth on page 20, recommendation 1 and 2, Kim.
Correct.
Is there a second to that? Yamasaki seconds. Any further discussion on the recommendations as set forth on page 20 of items 1 and 2 as stated? All right, then, calling for a vote. Is there any opposition to either of the recommendation, to the recommendation now considered as in its entirety, page 1 and 2 on page 20 of the report? Hearing no opposition, I'll deem the recommendation at page 20 unanimously approved. So, we've been at it since 10 o'clock or earlier, but if you don't mind, I think this next item relatively brief. So maybe we take the next item before we have a brief recess. That's item 3, set forth at page 24 of your material, and that's El Dorado Superior Court Workload Formula Adjustment Request. This also is an action item, and this is, again, a consideration from FMS on a recommendation from El Dorado Superior Court to adjust the workload formula. And for that, I will turn to Leah. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. I want to give just a little bit of background about the process. I'm sure you have the members in the room, but in general, the adjustment request process is the method by which courts can request a change to the workload formula. Whereas in December, we sent out a solicitation to all courts asking for their feedback. Responses are due back in January. And then we have processes for evaluating those requests. We start with working with the chair of TICVAC to review each of the requests and to determine which part of the workload formula may be impacted so that we can decide who actually does the evaluation of the request. So when I talk about parts of the workload formula, I think there are really three things. There are, number one, the overarching policy decisions that this committee makes in trial court funding. And then more specifically, there are two components. There are the underlying RAS model, the resource assessment study model, and that is the methodology that we use to assess workload needs. And then the second part is the conversion of that workload to dollars. And that falls under the purview of the funding methodology. For any adjustment requests that affect the underlying RAS model, there are policies in place that allow TICVAC to directly make that referral to the workload assessment advisor. But for adjustment requests that either directly affect the conversion of workload to dollars or that are more have to do with the overarching policy decisions, the referral goes to FMS. So the issue specifically that El Dorado put forward is the following, and I'm just quoting directly from their request, which is included in the materials right around page 26. So the court requests that the required resources to operate multiple locations, specifically small stores with multiple locations, is not factored into the workload model at this time. So in this case, our initial assessment was that the request should be referred to FMS. And we prepared a report and reviewed, reviewed it as at its October 8th of 19 meeting. And that full report and the analysis made by FMS is attached to the materials again at page 26. And we looked at three different policy areas for receipt. The first one is that the workload formula currently allocates funding by court or to the court as a whole, and it is the funding is allocated regardless of the number of locations where the court may operate. Secondly, while the workload formula does include a number of adjustments made for the smaller courts so that to try to neutralize any sort of disadvantage in the model, there currently is no specific adjustment for location. And the third, the emphasis in the workload formula has been on local court decision making in terms of how to spend the funds and the number of locations to operate. In addition to these workload formula policies, we also reached out to the facilities group to see whether or not there were factors that our committee should consider in terms of citing new court locations. And what we found was that there was nothing to draw on in terms of recommendations for the number of locations that we operate. So the discussion at that October 8th FMS meeting was really robust, and I will let Judge Buckley add additional detail if he would like, but I would just summarize the discussion as saying that members felt very strongly that this was an issue that was really worthy of consideration, but ultimately decided that it was not something that fell into the funding methodology subcommittee's portion of the model for review. And so the crux of the request really is that the workload formula should provide adequate staffing, namely managerial staffing, to oversee multiple locations. And as the discussion honed in on that element, it was decided that really the best thing to do would be to send the item to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee to see if an adjustment should be made on the workload side of the model. So procedurally, because the recommendation was made to FMS, the recommendation that we're going to make today is that the request be denied at this time. And we have already spoken to you about making that recommendation to refer the item to the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee. And this this process is consistent with current policy and the way we handle these things. WAC happened to meet earlier this week, and so we took advantage of that to send members a copy of the report at their next meeting, which is scheduled in February. And so, again, at this time, the request is that we, the committee, deny it, but keep in mind that it will probably be part of the second review once the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee has concluded its request.
So not to get too far ahead of us, but if it does go back to them, then it circles back to us once they take action on it.
Right, right. So at that point, I think we treat it like we would, if it had been referred to workload the first time through, then yes, then the workload committee would come back.
We would have to update the model numbers, right? On any change that might make. Yes, is that what you mean? Yes.
Okay. All right. So the recommendation set forth on page 25 of your materials. At this point, and thank you, Leah, thank you very much for that presentation. Invite discussion. And if there's anything that the co-chairs of FMS want to add, sounds like it was, I think the term was robust discussion, which is always good.
For someone that is new, I don't think anyone here is new to budgeting, given where you're coming from, but what we lose sight of sometimes is that get into workload formula and so forth. People start thinking of number of judges or number of courtrooms and hence number of locations and so forth. But ultimately, we go down to the root of workload and therefore staffing and why it is not really ideal for this committee and why WAC is the better place to analyze this.
There's always other avenues.
Hence, I would move that we
excellent.
Dr.
Buckley moves to approve the recommendation set forth on page 90, on page 25 of 96 of the materials of item 3.
Judge Thompson will second.
Judge Thompson second. Moved and seconded the recommendation set forth be approved. Any further discussion? Questions? Hearing none, calling for the vote. Is there any opposition to the recommendation set forth on page 25 as related to item 3? Looking around the room, hearing, seeing none, and hearing none on the phone, I'll deem the recommendation of page 25 unanimously approved, which coincidentally gets us right to noon. I know how anxious you all are to stay as long as we can, but I would propose that we perhaps break for 20 minutes to allow everybody time to sort of refresh, get whatever they need to get through the rest of the day. But if you're okay with 20 minutes, that will get us back at 12:20, and I think that gets us well within our 2 o'clock end date, end time. So for those of you listening in, we're going to go off now, but we will start at 12:20 promptly. Thank you.
We are. Welcome back to those of you joining us on the phone and those listening in. Thank you so much. We remain on task, and that gets us to item four on the agenda, which is updates to the funds held on behalf of the trial courts, policy related to funds held on behalf of. And luckily, we have Cottrell Wood here to present this for us. Consideration of, again, an FPS subcommittee recommendation on revisions to the funds held on behalf of submission process, which will help us streamline the submissions and the submission schedule and make a change to the recipient of the requests. And Cottrell can explain this in more coherent fashion.
Cottrell, pretty good job. I had a business meeting on April 15 and 2016. The council approved the current fund set on behalf process relating to the 1% fund balance cap. For those interested, the current policy can be found on pages 36 through 39 of attachment 4A. Currently, new and amended funds set on behalf requests must be submitted to the administrative director, the court's TJ, or the court's executive officer at least 40 business days before the date of the next judicial council meeting. Additionally, the current submission schedule has historically included roughly five submission dates. One in February, one in April, June, August, and December. The current timeline, from our experience, doesn't necessarily align that well with courts in their year-end closing process. It makes it difficult for them to identify their preliminary and final fund balance cap, and essentially to provide a more efficient process for the courts, FPS met, and their recommendation is to streamline from five submission dates to three. There would be one in August, which would allow courts to provide for their preliminary request, one in November for a final request, and a date in April for courts to amend their previously approved request. FPS is also recommending changes so that those requests no longer go to the administrative director, but instead to the director of budget services, and going forward to make any language corrections where appropriate. I've outlined the proposed language changes, and they can be seen on pages 40 through 42.
So this doesn't in any way prevent an individual, a court, from making a funds held on behalf of a request. Actually, it makes it easier for them because it reduces the work they need to do during the year. Okay. And it goes, instead of going, not to get too informal, but instead of being considered by Mr. Hoshino, they'll come back down to Mr. Theodorovich from Martin Deslaco. Okay, who's not in the room right now. So the recommendation is set forth at page 34 of the materials. And now the, and Cottrell, thank you so much. Any discussion on this essentially streamlining recommendation for FPS? Doesn't look like it. Is there a motion? Moved approval by Mr. Yamasaki. I heard a lot, but I'll turn to Ms. Turner for the second, joined by Judge Marginis. So moved and seconded that the recommendation is set forth on page 34 of 96 of the material be approved. Hearing no further discussion, is there any opposition to the motion as made? Hearing none, is deemed unanimously passed. The recommendation is approved. Cottrell, thanks so much. I think we're going to hear back from you again, but we're now turning to the Michelle Show. And that takes us to item 5 on your agenda. It starts at page 44 of the materials.
And we've got a few CWR, or children waiting room report action items for today. Michelle, I think, is going to present on each of those individually. So the first item, 5, is a consideration of an extension on receipt of CWR funds during temporary closure for the San Mateo Superior Court. Requests usually go through FPS, but given timing, this is first and then go to us, but many of these are timing issues. We just have to stay consistent with council timing and agenda, and therefore it's going to come right to tick back this and a few other items. Michelle.
Thank you, and now it's good afternoon.
Yes.
San Mateo Superior Court receives children's waiting room distribution under government code, and under judicial council policy, the court applied to the budget services of a temporary closure to the children's waiting room and applied to continue receiving distributions during this temporary closure. The court has experienced difficulty in securing a new vendor to run its children's waiting room at its Hall of Justice in Redwood City and the Youth Services Center in San Mateo after the prior vendor canceled its contract in June 2019. The court has issued 2 solicitations and has plans to issue a 3rd request for proposal in early 2020 in an effort to contract with a new vendor. The court anticipates reopening the children's waiting room September 1st, 2020. The continuation of children's waiting room distribution will allow the court to accumulate funding to support operations following the reopening. The attachments to the report include the government code section 70640, the children's waiting room distribution and fund balance policy, San Mateo's request for continued distribution, the children's waiting room distribution amounts and total distributions by court. I would like to note that the heading for the 2018-19 notes that those distributions occurred through October 2018. However, the data is reflecting the full 2018-19 fiscal year. And San Mateo Superior Court's distribution and filing fees. And as Judge Conklin mentioned, we are going directly to tick back instead of through FPS to accommodate this request being sent to the Judicial Council at its January 16, 17, 2020 meeting.
Excellent. Any questions? And again, I'm probably going further than I need to as far as, but for those new members or those not aware, and it's an appropriate analogy to sort of compare this to the funds held on behalf of. In other words, these funds can't be used for any other purpose in child's waiting room. And some of the management of these funds is a little difficult given what we've seen here. And so, of course, ask if the funds continue, if the room is closed, so they can accommodate it or other. But these funds don't go anywhere else than children's waiting room distribution. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So with that, the recommendation is set forth on page 45 of 96. Any questions of, and we've got a few of these on the agenda today, but on this one specifically from San Mateo, any questions for Michelle or otherwise?
Judge Martinez? Question. So funds accumulate, and the waiting room opens in a year, year and a half. Does that court's allocation then get reduced because those funds are sitting there?
Yeah. No.
Okay, so then, well, assuming the allocations keep up with the need, there'll always be a balance there of the funds, excess funds, which are the funds that are currently being held.
Well, the court will continue to receive those funds. Those funds get distributed back to the court, and they will continue to do that. So it doesn't affect their other funding distribution. Oftentimes, courts that request this when they're having closures, it's oftentimes that even what they're receiving for children's waiting room is truly insufficient for their costs, and so they're in actual spending some of their operational budget to fund excess costs.
So in the event that they had more money for children's waiting room set aside than they actually needed, we do a review every 2 years of their fund balances. They're only allowed to retain so much, and then we would take back and put back to the CCTF anything that's above the threshold.
Thank you.
So they can't, so again, not that they would, but this, for instance, that can't be shifted over to funds held on behalf of it. The court either has to use it for children's waiting room, or if they accumulate too much, then it ends up going back.
Yes.
Any other questions? Is there a motion concerning the recommendation on page 45?
So moved, Marginis.
Judge Marginis moves. Judge Gabe approved. Judge Gabe seconds. Moved and seconded the recommendation set forth on page 45 be approved. Any further discussion? Any opposition to the recommendation?
Hearing none, seeing none, the recommendation of page 45.
Oh, Judge Taniguchi. I'm sorry, Mr. Taniguchi. I keep trying to give you a less impressive role, and you are abstaining,
okay,
given it's your court. And that's an appropriate example, I think, where it's so specific to your court, and I appreciate that. That abstention, I'll show it's unanimous approval with one abstention. Thank you very much. And now back to Michelle. This is item number six, consideration of extension on receipt of CWR funds during temporary closure.
No.
I'm reading five. I apologize.
Hold on a second. Nope.
Yep.
There
six,
you go.
Six and four. Let me re-group. Item six, page 54 of your materials. And this is Michelle again. This is, however, an update to the children's waiting room policy as set forth. The recommendation itself is at the bottom of page 55, but it's consideration of a recommendation from FPS concerning CWR distribution of fund balance, including an update to the timing of the fund balance, cap reductions, and other details that I will let Michelle describe.
So the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee is recommending revisions to the Children's Waiting Room Distribution and Fund Balance Policy that includes an update to the timing of when the Children's Waiting Room fund balance cap reductions will occur, addressing language in the policy that is no longer relevant, and other technical revisions for the purpose of clarifying language in the policy. Additionally, Judicial Council's Budget Services staff is recommending changes to the timeline. Under the current policy, fund balance cap reductions occur in the August distribution. It is recommended to revise to the October trial court distribution. This will allow time for courts to close their fiscal year and finalize fund balances, for the total trial court distributions to occur since the final distribution is scheduled for August 30th of each year, and for Budget Services staff to calculate the estimated reduction, provide to courts, receive confirmation from courts, and allow for courts to submit cap adjustment requests, which must be received within 60 days of the end of the fiscal year. Recommended technical changes include removing Section E of the policy, since this section is no longer relevant. This section was related to courts that received a distribution between January 1st, 2006 and June 30th, 2014, but never operated a children's waiting room. Revising current language specifying that the biennial review will occur every other year beginning with fiscal year 2016 to fiscal years ending with odd number. Clarification that if a court has submitted a request for a cap adjustment that is pending Judicial Council consideration, that the requesting court will not have their allocation reduced in October, but instead will have action taken in the next scheduled distribution following Judicial Council approval or denial of the fund balance cap adjustment request, and other general language changes. In addition to the FPS recommendation, staff identified other refinements following the September 26, 2019 FPS meeting and present them for inclusion in the recommendation for consideration to the Judicial Council. They include moving submission requirements above Section A of the policy to provide clarity that the requirement pertains to all types of CWR requests, and changing the number of days or submissions from 45 days to 70 business days prior to the council meeting to allow sufficient time for consideration of requests through FPS and kickback to the Judicial Council. Attachment 6A provides the current CWR distribution and fund balance policy, and Attachment 6B provides the proposed CWR distribution and fund balance policy.
So this comes to us from FPS, except as Michelle noted, there's a couple additions that comes from Budget Services staff, which is very appropriate. There's times when, as these issues transition from a subcommittee to this advisory committee, Budget Services sees additional issues and just tries to sort of keep them, clear them up. And so I just want to be clear that, as Michelle noted, they did supplement the FPS recommendation just a little bit with some of the other thoughts they had to make it even more effective. So the recommendation, as summarized, is set forth at page 55 of the material. And Judge Margins has kind of talked what you were talking about, and item 7 does as well. All three of these really play together. But right now we're at the recommendation for item 6 on page 55. Any questions, discussion at all? Everybody full? Okay. I'd invite a motion to to approve the recommendation at page 55.
Planner moves approval.
Planner moves approval. Any second?
Second.
There are quite a few, but I heard we're going to give Kim Bartleson between the Kims.
You take this one first.
Kim, yep. Excellent. Kim to the second. So moved and seconded. Excuse me. That the recommendation at page 55 be approved. Any further discussion?
Can I just make an observation?
Absolutely.
So I am always kind of fascinated by how much time we spend as a group and the council spends on children's waiting room, which is such a small, you know, relatively small budget item. I mean, it's, I think, $5 million or something a year. But there's a lot of process that goes into this. And I'm not suggesting that we fix this now, but I want to make the observation that this is maybe an over-micromanaged area of our, you know, of our trial court budget advisory committee. And I'm just always amazed that we can devote, you know, 20, 25 pages of white paper to dealing with something that is, that has such a small impact on just a few courts.
Lucy, and then David.
Well, this is relatively new, though, so I don't know if you recall. I mean, this came into place after I got here, so it's like 2015. Do you remember what led to this?
I think it was just an acknowledgement that there was large amounts of money that was spent.
I think that's how it started, Zlatko, is that a lot of courts had gotten money and then didn't actually open children's waiting. So it got cleaned up like back in 2014 or 15. I can't quite remember when.
Okay, specifically what it did is it allowed courts a big amount to have larger reserves under the 1% because they were excludable, so it gave them more financial flexibility. Plus, it was not putting them back in the trial court trust fund to reallocate during the Great Recession. I think the reasons that we did it were right, but can it be refined?
I mean, I just, you know, I just look at it as being a kind of a huge amount of effort now that we've kind of thrown a net over the, you know, the courts that, who knows, follow their own. They thought they'd have a children's waiting room. They didn't have one.
So I've got a thought on that. David, did you have a comment as well? Did you?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. My response. My question was answered.
Okay. So I would wonder if it'd be appropriate, and I hate to have more work for them, but to task back to staff, specifically Michelle, as we can see, is what they just did. They took an FPS recommendation and made it even better. If staff has any thoughts to share with FPS about how this could, I mean, I don't know if it's an appropriate analogy, but at council meeting, they have a lot of items that are considered on, what's the word?
Consent.
And if, I mean, maybe this is some type, we can have some type of consent agenda where these type of things. I don't know if that meets the rules, but if staff has recommendations to FPS that they can share with us, I'd invite them to do that.
When we take these items to council, they're consent there.
These are consent.
I don't know if, so currently FPS makes funds held on behalf recommendations directly to the council. Is this something maybe that the committee would be comfortable with giving the charge to the subcommittee going straight to council as it relates to children's waiting room?
Or maybe even somebody else who works more directly on the budget, but who knows? Okay.
I'm not asking for anything.
I'm just making an observation that it seems rather Byzantine.
Yep. Byzantine. That's a word we don't use here very often. See? I'm going to have Kim explain that to me afterwards. So. I might be getting ahead of myself. It's been moved and then seconded by Kim. Second.
Mm-hmm.
So any opposition to the recommendation set forth on page 55? The recommendation is unanimously approved. And then finalizing the CWR discussions, item 7, starting at page 63 of your material with the recommendation, page 64. And this is, I think, maybe a little more precise to what Judge Marshall had mentioned, and this is biannual review of reductions for fund balances. Kim? I'm sorry, Michelle.
Thank you.
Unless either Kim wants to, of the triple Kim, there's a third.
Oh, but she can have it.
The current Judicial Council approved children's waiting room distribution and fund balance policy places a cap on the amount of fund balance that courts can accumulate. Judicial Council staff completed its biannual review, and 7 courts had fund balance above their cap, totaling $773,192. Column F, as in Frank, of Attachment 7B shows those courts with fund balances above their cap. Three of the courts, Contra Costa, San Bernardino, and Santa Barbara, submitted fund balance cap adjustment requests totaling $485,549. Because San Mateo's fund balance is due to unrestricted funds being put into a children's waiting room account to cover a multi-year contract, no fund balance cap adjustment request was deemed necessary for the Judicial Council to approve. The remaining three courts with fund balances over the cap, Sacramento, San Joaquin, and San Luis Obispo, have agreed to the fund balance reduction. These reductions, totaling $207,975, were applied in the October 2019 distribution. The Fiscal Planning Subcommittee recommends the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approve the CWR cap adjustment for consideration by the Council at its business meeting on January 16, 17, 2020. Each court's fund balance adjustment request can be found on attachments 7C through 7E.
So this just comes down to those numbers, and I think that might have been what Judge Margins mentioned too. You some have to keep extra, and those that have fund balance in excess, it gets returned. Any discussion on the recommendation as set forth on page 64 of the material? This is for our final CWR item 7. Hearing no discussion, is there a motion?
Move approval.
Moved by Judge Ryan. Second?
Bartleson.
Without an additional Kim, seconds. Moved and seconded that the recommendation at page 64 of the materials be approved. Any further discussion? Any opposition?
Nancy Everhart here.
Who's that?
Nancy. Sorry, Judge Conklin. Nancy Everhart here. I'm just registering an abstention as to San Bernardino only.
All right.
And if we're just saying for Contra Costa.
Okay, so again, since these are court-specific requests, that those abstentions are appropriate. So does staff, did staff get all the abstentions?
Just Ryan and Judge Shannon.
And Kim.
And Kelly, sorry. And Ryan, yes? No, Ryan, it was Kelly.
Kelly,
thank you.
Shannon.
Everhart.
And Everhart.
Got it, thank you.
With that, there's those abstentions are registered. Any opposition? Hearing none, it's deemed unanimously approved. Thank you. And now we move, I think, to the final action item on our agenda.
Sorry.
And that's item 8. That's at page 77 of your material. And this is a 2018-19 final one-time cap reduction for fund balances above the 1%. And Michelle, welcome back.
Thank you. Government code requires the Judicial Council to set a preliminary allocation to trial courts July of each year and finalize allocations in January of each year. The preliminary and final allocations are to be offset by the amount of reserves in excess of funds authorized to be carried over pursuant to Subdivision B of Section 77203. Per Judicial Council policy, trial courts submitted preliminary 1% computation and preliminary year-end information. The Council approved the 2018-19 preliminary one-time allocation reduction of $7.89 million at its business meeting on September 24, 2019. Trial Court submitted final 1% computation with final year-end information by October 15, 2019. The corresponding final allocation reduction related to the fund balance is $6.94 million. Attachment 8A reflects the Trial Court's final closed 2018-19 accounting records, and column J displays court's final reduction computation. Attachment 8B provides detail on final 2018-19 1% fund cap allocation adjustments and funds held on behalf request amounts that will be allocated for current year expenditures, shown in column F, and amounts that will be retained in the trial court trust fund for future year expenditures, shown in column G. Budget Service staff recommends the TICFAC approve the adjustment of the preliminary 1% fund balance cap allocation reduction in the amount of $955,749 for a final reduction to trial court allocations of $6.94 million for consideration by the Judicial Council at its business meeting on January 16, 17, 2020.
Okay, so that recommendation is set forth on page 79. So did that essentially mean that the
all the courts put together, there was $6.9 million that exceeded the 1%, and that's getting returned.
No, it'll get reduced.
Right, it will get...
Part of it will be returned for their current year. Part of it will be held for future.
Right.
So
that 6.9 was reduced then by funds held on behalf.
Yes, right. Yes.
So it's funds held on behalf coordinating with the 1%.
That's
which
right.
Will then turn into 3%. So. Any questions? Motion? All right. Judge Buckley moves the recommendation at page 79 be approved. Is there a second?
Second.
I heard Kim Turner before Mike Planet, so Kim prevailed. The Kims prevailed. moved and seconded that the recommendation at page 79 be approved as stated. Hearing no further discussion. Any opposition? Hearing none, the recommendation is set forth at page 79 is unanimously approved. We have completed our action items. All thank you all so much, but we're not done yet. We have an informational item, and Cottrell remains with us. Luckily, thank you, Cottrell. This is page 83 of your materials as our first informational item, and this is trial court trust fund funds held on behalf of expenditure reporting.
Cottrell, go ahead. Yes, this is somewhat similar to the process I outlined earlier. At its business meeting on April 15, 2016, the council once again approved or adopted that funds held on behalf process. That adopted process requires, upon completion of a funds held on behalf project or planned expenditure, courts are required to report to the trial court budget advisory committee within 90 days, essentially on the status of that project and how those funds were expended. This past October, we requested a status update on those projects that were either completed through 2018-19 or the first quarter of this fiscal year. Reports on completion of each project or planned expenditure were provided as of November 14, 2019. They can be found on pages 89 through 96 of attachment 1A2, and a summary of each, which is a very detailed summary, can be found on page 84 of the material.
Excellent. Great. Information is always good. Any questions? Okay. And then finally, information item number two. We're back to Michelle. This should be the Michelle Cottrell Show. Michelle?
Thank you.
No materials.
No materials.
At its March 21st, 2019 meeting, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approved a motion to refer the question of funding trial court lease costs to the Trial Court Facility Modification Advisory Committee for consideration. Budget Services staff contacted Facility Services, who took the issue up with their advisory committee. At its May 17, 2019 meeting, the advisory committee ratified and approved an additional 2020-21 budget change proposal initial funding request for trial court leasing funding in the amount of $8 million for consideration by the Judicial Branch Budget Committee at its May 14, 2019 meeting. The BCP concept was approved for BC consideration by the Judicial Council at its July 2019 business meeting, which was approved at the council meeting. It's in BCP.
So it's now in BCP status being considered for the as Lotko told us, the next budget cycle. An example of all BCP's work. Any discussion on this? I see people standing, ready to go. All right. So just a couple real quick. Our next meeting is a telephonic meeting for January 23rd, 2020 to discuss trial court budget change proposal priorities. I remind you all you've been assigned. I think everybody has a liaison, one or two courts. I'd encourage you to reach out to those courts. It doesn't have to be any more formal than a phone call or an email, but that's their opportunity. As we started off this meeting, I think one of the strengths we have here is to let courts know they have a voice and they can be heard through the funnel of this advisory committee. So please complete that as all possible. If there's for some reason, if you're thinking I just can't get to it, just let me know, and then I'll have Rebecca do it. So.
And I'll ask Gary to do it.
Gary's already done it. So thank you all. Very pleasant holidays to come. Travel safely, and I call us in unless there's anything else for the good of the order. We're adjourned. Thank you.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you. And goodbye.